Jiradham Madhava Kunja Bihari Raya. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Janna Ballava Gribada Tari Gopi Janna Ballava Gribada Tari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Janna Ballava Gribada Tari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Yamuna Tina Banachari Yamuna Yamuna Tina Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Ballava Gribada Tari Gopi Janna Ballava Gribada Tari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Jaya Nitra Vishnu Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pari Vraja Kacharya Asto Tarasata Shri Shri Madhu Chivan Gopi Kaisa Islam Vividi Pandacharya Savior of the whole world, Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Nitalu Vishnu Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Pariva Jakacharja Ashto Tarasata Shri Shri Majestu Vangari Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tako Maharaja ki. Ananta Koti Vaishnavindiki Nama Charja Saridastakuri ki. प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री गौर भक्त वृंद श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गो गोवर्धन श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोवर्धन की ब्रजभूमि श्री वृंदाव धाम की नवदीप मायापुर धाम की पुरुषोत्तम चतुर जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की गंगामय की जमुनामय की भक्ति देवी की समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय निताय गौ प्रेमानंदी ओ ग्लोरियस समवरीज ओ ग्लोरियस समवरीज ओ ग्लोरियस समवरीज ओ ग्लोरियस ओ ग्लोरियस दैट इज फॉर श्री गुरु एंड श्री गुरुंगा ओ ग्लोरियस श्री प्रभुपादा की जय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Kasya manas te bhuvi bhogi bhogayo Kasya manas te bhuvi bhogi bhogayo Kasya manas te bhuvi Kasya manas te bhuvi bhogi bhogayo Striya na sajed bhujayo mahabhuja Striya na sajed bhujayo mahabhuja Striyana Sajjad Bhujayo Mahabhuja Kasya Manaste Bhuvi Bhogi Bhogayo Striyana Sajjad Bhujayo Mahabhuja Yo Nata Vagadhim Alam Grinodhata Yonata Vagadimalam Grinodhata Yonata Vagadimalam Grinodhata Smita Valokena Charati Apohitum Smita Valokena Charat Yapo Hitum Smita Valokena Charat Yapo Hitum Yonata Vagadimalam Grihon Grinodata Smita Valokena Charat Yapo Hitum Kasya manaste bhuvi bhogi bhogayo Striyana sajjad bhujayo mahabhuja Yonata vagadimalam grinodhata Smita valokena charat yapohitum Kasya manaste bhuvi bhogi bhogayo Striyana sajjad bhujayo mahabhuja Yonata vagadimalam grinodhata Smita valokena charat yapohitum
Smita Valokena Charat Yapo Hitum
Vaishnavis. Kasya, whose, mana, mind, te, your, bhuvi, in this world, bhogi bhogayo, like the body of a serpent, striya, of a woman, na, not, sajet, becomes attracted. Bhujayo, by the arms. Mahabhuja, O mighty armed. Ya, one who. Anatavagha, of poor women like me. Adhim, distresses of the mind. Alam, able. Grina Udhata, by aggressive mercy. Smita Avalokena, by attractive smiling. Charati, travels. Apohitum, to dissipate. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. O mighty armed, who in this world will not be attracted by your arms, which are just like the bodies of serpents? Actually, you relieve the distress of husbandless women like us by your attractive smile and your aggressive mercy. We think that you are traveling on the surface of the earth just to benefit us only, responsively. O mighty armed, who in this world will not be attracted by your arms, which are just like the bodies of serpents? Actually, you relieve the distresses of husbandless women like us by your attractive smile and your aggressive mercy. We think that you are traveling on the surface of the earth, just to benefit us only. So this is it's kind of interesting, because in the beginning of this chapter, Narad Muni, he says to Prachinabhishat that I'll narrate to you an old history, like a very old history. But it's not actually a history, it's an allegorical story. And he's, Narad Muni does this quite a bit. He's a very expert preacher, and he's able to present Krishna conscious philosophy to people in relation to time, place, and circumstance, so that people very quickly get the message. Because we see that Prachinabhahi, it's described that he does so many yagyas. The name Prachinabhahi actually means there's kusha strewn everywhere. So he does so many yagyas that the earth is seen to be constantly strewn with kusha grass, because when the priests sit down to do the yagya, they sit on kusha, and they also use kusha around the fire and different things like that. So there's so much kusha grass that the earth is covered with kusha. And he's doing these yagyas for fruitive gain. And yet still we see at the start that he's of this chapter, he's having a conversation with Narad Muni, and he's explaining that he's thinking that by doing these yagyas, he's going to become happy in life, and then he'll live a peaceful life and he'll be happy. But Narad Muni explains to him this is not going to happen, because this is not the way to attain peace and happiness. Ultimately, he'll get to the point of explaining to him that only through devotional service can one become peaceful and happy. Because as we understand that material activities only bring material results, and we also understand in this material world there is no possibility of happiness, because the material world is a place of suffering. You don't have to look very far to see that. In living in ISKCON, we're very sheltered and protected from all the goings on in the material world. But if you travel around a little bit, or you go out, you know, working or whatever like that, you can see that actually there's so much difficulty in this material world. People are struggling so hard to make money, so hard to make ends meet, so hard to pay their bills. Very, very difficult for them. And they become very morose when they're not able to actually achieve their ambitions, their goals. And they suffer. They suffer deeply. Yet, someone like Prachabahi, he's a very, very wealthy king. He's not seeing this because, you know, obviously he's experiencing great opulence and wealth, and therefore he's able to provide himself with a comfortable lifestyle. And he's thinking that he's very happy in this world. So Narad Muni, he's using this story to try to snap him out of his ignorance, because he's very much entangled in this concept that he's enjoying in this material world. And, you know, Narad Muni can't just come to him and say, you know, well, you should give all this up and just, you know, take shelter of the process of bhakti. Yet we see there are many great kings who have enjoyed for, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years, and then when they have the right stimulus, the right catalyst, or they associate with a certain sadhu, then very quickly they just renounce everything. You can see in the case of who was fighting for the demigods for thousands of years? Huh? No. Not Mujkunda. No. Katvanga. Yeah, Katvanga. Thank you. Katvanga Maharaj. He was fighting for the Devadas for thousands of years. Now, actually, he was such a great warrior, he won the war for them. But he was just a normal mortal. He wasn't a Devata or anything like that. But he was such a great warrior, he was able to defeat the Daityas. And at the end, you know, the demigods were very pleased with his endeavor and the fact that, you know, he'd won back their kingdom, etc. like that. And so they asked him if he wanted a benediction. And he said, you know, I want to know when I'm going to die. Because he understood what the purpose of life was. The purpose of life wasn't just to, you know, live a life of enjoyment. The purpose of life was to, you know, ultimately surrender to Krishna and go back to Godhead. And so when he found out that he had only a few moments to live, he just dropped everything and then just took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and achieved, you know, spiritual emancipation. But we see here with Prachabahi, his ignorance is very deep. He's a great personality, he's a very strong, powerful personality, but his ignorance is very, very deep. And therefore, just to receive a simple instruction is not Narad Muni. You know, this is the greatness of Narad Muni. Is just for Prachabahi to receive a simple instruction, he knows he's not going to be able to digest that. He knows that he's going to need something much more powerful for him to realize that his situation in this material world is very, very tenuous. So then Narad Muni sets out about telling this allegorical story of Paranjan. And it's quite an involved story. You know, we see here it's talking about, you know, the friends that are associating with, you know, with this young girl, and you know, the city with nine gates, you know, the allegory of the body, and then the serpent with five heads are the different life heirs and things like that. And, you know, and Narad Muni's not revealing these things to Prachabahi. He's not revealing what these mean. But as it goes on in the story, that then you know, Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life. Thank you. Becomes a woman in his next life, and then Narad Muni continues with a story about this goat. And this is where it gets really interesting. He starts to tell this story about a goat and how this goat becomes attached to his she-goat, and he's just following it everywhere, and everything she does, he's just, you know, basically bowing at her feet. And at one point, Prachabahi, he says, "My God, I'm the goat." He find, you know, after all this whole story of Narad Muni revealing, you know, like revealing to him the situation of a living entity who's entangled in sense gratification, he gets it. And we see that Narad Muni, sometimes he has to do this. He has to, you know, present things in a very covered way, if you like, so that the person he's trying to give Krishna consciousness to can wake up to the fact of what's going on. So it's a very, you know, that's also an indication of Narad Muni's compassion when he sees a great soul like Prachinabahi, who's just completely covered over by the material energy and forgotten his position as a servant of Krishna. Therefore, Narad Muni, he invests time into them. And we all know that when you're trying to present Krishna consciousness to people, that sometimes you have to invest a lot of time and energy. And, you know, and of course, if you can see that the person is receptive and they're slowly digesting the information, then we can understand it's worth investing that time, because ultimately their Krishna consciousness is reawoken. And the compassionate nature of the Vaishnava, as we see is being demonstrated here by Narad Muni, is that he doesn't like to see anyone suffer in this material world. Therefore, he's willing to expend a lot of effort and time to help this person, Prachinabahi, come to the point of understanding his difficult situation in this material world. And we see, you know, like just when you meet people, just like on the plane last night, I was speaking to some of the air crew, you know, telling them about Mayapur and telling them about, you know, Krishna consciousness and stuff, and just trying to encourage them to go to Mayapur. But they're just it's like completely absorbed, you know, young people, they're just completely absorbed in the idea of enjoying life. They're thinking they're having a great time. You know, glamorous job on it, you know, so-called glamorous job. I mean, I wouldn't do it. But, you know, on airplane, they're traveling around the country, getting to meet people, things like that. And they're thinking that everything's nice, everything's perfect. But we just never know. At any given point, things could change very rapidly, very dramatically. We could be cruising along, having a very nice, comfortable lifestyle, then all of a sudden, we contract some terminal disease, cancer, or you know, what, have a heart attack. You know, these bodies are so temporary, yet we're thinking the body is everything. We're thinking the body is going to bring us so much happiness, it's going to, you know, live for. When we see the people here, in this material world, they act like they think they're never going to die. And they make such big arrangements like they're never going to die. I used to live in a suburb in Melbourne called Albert Park, and it was a very wealthy area. I wasn't wealthy. It was very poor. That's where the temple is. I lived in the Brahmachari Ashram. And all around, there was these like big multi-million-dollar houses. And you see people that they're constantly, like, you know, spending more and more money to make the house better and better. And, you know, put in a swimming pool, put in this, put in that, you know, put another floor on top, extend it out the back, put in a garage. Just constantly spending so much money. Like there's no end to it. Like they're never going to have to give it up. And then one day, you know, there's a knock on the door. Death is there. And they have to give it all up. They can't hang on to it. You can't hang on to a penny. I used to have an auntie, and she always used to say to us, you know, because she was really wealthy, and she always used to say to her, if I can't take it with me, I'm not going to go, regarding her money. But the fact of it is, she died, and her money stayed behind. You can't control these things. We have no control over the outcome of our life in terms of material enjoyment and how long the body is going to last, because you don't know. You have no idea. And if someone's intelligent and they understand, it's just like Lord Chandas Thakur, he describes in that song, he says, Kamana dala jala jivana talamala. The life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. And if you've ever seen lotus leaves in the rain, they're very interesting. Like usually the leaves are shaped like that. And when it rains, the middle part fills up with water. And when it gets to a certain, I guess you'd call it critical mass, it's too much for the lotus stem to hold, so it just goes like that and dumps all the water out. Just like that in a second. You don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know how much it is, but it's just gone. Our life is like that. And Lord Chandas Thakur, he made this very striking analogy of how fleeting the existence is here in this material world. So someone who's intelligent will actually, you know, do their best to understand the temporary nature of this material world and not place their faith in the material body, not place their faith in material circumstances, because they can change at any point. You just don't know. You know, I mean, we could all be just sitting here and you know, discussing philosophy, whatever. And then I remember I was in America, USA, when you know, they had this 9/11 attack where the planes flew into the World Trade Center. Then about 4 days later, 3 days later, I think it was, a plane was taking off from LaGuardia Airport, and one of the engines dropped off. Just fell off the plane and dropped through the roof of a house, completely destroyed the house. There was no one in it at the time. But if someone had been in it, they wouldn't have survived. So you just never know what's going to happen in this material world. Therefore, an intelligent person doesn't place their faith in fallible soldiers, doesn't place their faith in this fallible situation of the material body, but places their faith in Krishna, takes shelter of Krishna. And this is what Narad Muni is leading Prachinabhahi to, that you're taking shelter of this temporary situation, thinking this is everything, thinking this is the all in all, thinking you're going to be happy. But it can be gone in a moment, you just don't know. So, but because he's intelligence, Maya Prahita Gyana, his intelligence is stolen by illusion, therefore he's not seeing the inevitable reality of his existence in this material world, that at some point he's going to have to give up this body and you know, take on another body. He doesn't see that. But Narad Muni, out of his compassion, he wants to help him to see. Because, you know, with a lot of these, you know, with these kings, they come in great bloodlines, they usually have very, very elevated devotee forefathers and things like that. And so Narad Muni is seeing the greatness of the family line and the greatness of the personality of Prachinabhahi. Therefore, he wants to invest his time in him so that he can ultimately see the temporary nature of his situation in this material world and eventually go back to Godhead. Now, it's interesting, I think. Oh, actually, that's interesting. It's the verse before. Probably one of the most controversial purports in the Bhagavatam. Yeah. But it's a simple explanation, and it's explained in this verse. Because what we do is because we, it's just like this Atmavan Manyate Jagat, right? As I see it, that's how everything is. So because of our experience, because of our conditioning, this rape word, we see it to mean a particular thing. Prabhupada didn't mean it like that. If you look at a dictionary, an old dictionary, like, you know, old English, which is what the English Prabhupada grew up with, rape means something very different. And what it's saying here, this was explained to me by Vishakha. It's not a male perspective, right? It's a female perspective on it. Because, you know, she's a faithful disciple of Prabhupada. She wanted to understand how Prabhupada's words are correct. So we see here in the verse, it says, Grina Udhata. Yeah? So if you look at the old English definition of rape, it means, this Grina Udhata means like aggressive. So, you know, women like to be wooed. They like to be, you know, not everyone, but generally speaking, it's like this. They like to be wooed. They like to be, you know, just like we see here, how Puranjan, he's saying so many kind words. He's very aggressive in the way. He's very upfront, speaking to her directly. You know, you're so attractive. I can, you know, you don't have a husband, or you're the goddess of fortune. You're this, you're that, you know. And he's trying to flatter her like anything with this one purpose in mind. He wants to have sex with her. That's all it's about. So it's very aggressive. And he's not being very modest about it or anything like that. And she's responding to it. She's saying, oh, you know, I'd love to have your serpent-like arms wrapped around me, you know. So, you know, that's an understanding of it, that this aggressive approach is very attractive. Srila Prabhupada's purport. What time am I supposed to go to? 8:40, okay. Thank you. When a husbandless woman is attacked by an aggressive man, she takes his action to be mercy. See, Prabhupada's saying that right there. He's aggressive, and she likes it. Because in that aggression, he's bolstering her false ego. Saying, if you go back to the previous verses, how he's talking to her, you know, it's like, you know, I'm amazed that you walk on the ground. You must be, you look like some god, you know, demigoddess or something like that. How is it you're walking on the ground? You know, he's just flattering her like anything with one purpose in mind. And she's enjoying it. And even she goes so far as to say when she responds to him that those transcendentalists, they don't know what enjoyment's about. You're going to enjoy with me like you've never enjoyed before. She's really like, you know, laying it on thick, as we say in Australia, you know, really telling him that this is going to be, you're really going to like this, you know. And he's just falling for it hook, line, and sinker. He's just going for it, the whole thing, you know. When a husbandless woman is attacked by an aggressive man, she takes his action to be mercy. A woman is generally very much attracted by a man's long arms. They like to be, you know, they like to be held by the arms, especially strong. When the arms are strong, they like that. I know this from practical experience. A serpent's body is round and it becomes very narrow and thinner at the end. The beautiful arms of a man The beautiful arms of a man appear to a woman just like serpents, and she very much desires to be embraced by such arms. The word anata varga is very significant in this verse. Nata means husband, and a means without. A woman who has no husband is called anata, meaning one who is not protected. As soon as a woman attains the age of puberty, she immediately becomes very much agitated by sexual desire. It is therefore the duty of the father to get his daughter married before she attains puberty. And we see, you know, this is part of, you look at the Vedic culture, the Vedic system of how women would get married young. So that way they're protected, because what happens, and we see it very prevalent in this day and age, these young women, they're interested in freedom, liberty, all this type of stuff, and the parents just go along with it. Because they don't know any better, they don't have any spiritual guidance. And these young women and young men who are not in a relationship, you know, like a fixed relationship with a you know, member of the opposite sex, they create havoc in society because they're very licentious in their behavior. And they'll go, just like we see with this young woman here, she's flirting in a very, very strong way with this man. And he's just losing all good sense. He's just like, great, I want this. You know, this is fantastic. I'll be able to enjoy for 100 years. I'll be able to have sex life with this woman for 100 years. There's nothing better than that. And we understand this material world, as Prabhupada points out in the Bhagavad Gita, this material world is driven by the shackles of sex life. So she's playing into that. She's just telling him, you know, we can enjoy sex and you're going to have such a great time. You're really going to like it. Better than any transcendentalist has ever known. He's telling him, don't worry about all this transcendental stuff. It's a waste of time because you can't enjoy it. So Prabhupada's making the point here, as soon as a woman attains the age of puberty, because then these desires to have children become very strong. You know, women have this nature. They want to look after children. They like looking after children. And so these desires, they start to arouse within the heart and the consciousness, and it's just a biological function. But what happens is if they're not in a relationship, because they don't have this protection of a husband, then they start to look around. You know, they just look at any man. It doesn't matter, as long as he looks attractive, as long as he's got strong arms, handsome, you know, good job, he can make money, so he can support me with a house and all that sort of stuff. So this is a very dangerous thing in society when you have people in this situation where they're not actually controlling their mind and senses. And, you know, for a woman, they need to be, generally speaking, of course there are, you know, great transcendentalist men and women, but generally speaking, for a woman who's not in the situation where she's protected by her husband, she tends to wander, her mind will wander and look at different men. And men do the same. So if they're in a relationship and they actually have some character to them, then they're in the relationship, they're fixed in the relationship, they don't look elsewhere. But in this day and age, it's very, very different. You know, people get married and they don't seem to have any sense of duty or any sense of commitment in their relationship, that they're in a relationship for some time, they enjoy sex, and then it becomes boring. It's not enough for me, I need more. So they get another relationship. And that goes on for some time, and that gets boring. They give that one up, they get another relationship. They're just going from one to the next, the next, the next, the next. You know? And their whole life becomes focused around sense enjoyment. And as we know from the Bhagavatam, that this ultimately leads to they become bound by these strong ropes of material attachment. And it just leads them down to successive human and animal births. And actually, as it says in the Bhagavatam, it says, Nate vidu svarta gatemi vishu. They don't understand the goal of life because you're just immersed in sense gratification. So, you know, Narada Muni is trying to guide Prachnabahi to overcome this difficult situation and get out of this cycle of birth and death. It is therefore the duty of the father to get his daughter married before she attains puberty. Otherwise, she will be much mortified by not having a husband. Anyone who satisfies her desire for sex at that age becomes a great object of satisfaction. It is a psychological fact that when a woman at the age of puberty meets a man and the man satisfies her sexually, she will love that man for the rest of her life, regardless who he is. Thus, so-called love within this material world is nothing but sexual satisfaction. And generally you find, it's been my experience over the years, that generally you find that women always remember their first love. The other ones are just like, you know, they're just sort of dots on the landscape kind of thing. But the first one they always remember. And this is because at the age of puberty, when they have this connection, it's very strong. So this is part of the psychological makeup of a woman, so that they just, when they're in the age of puberty, they meet, you know, they're introduced or meet or whatever, have to a man, they get married and that's it. End of story. No, you know, and they'll never look elsewhere. You know? Especially if they have some character, but we see now it's just not like that. Or if it is, it's very rare to find people who are willing to make commitments in relationships. And you know, some countries, marriage is just, people don't get married anymore. They just live in a relationship of convenience, as long as it's, you know, convenient. As soon as it's inconvenient, they get divorced. And they have these, what they call prenuptial agreements, or prenups they call them, prenuptial agreements, right? So the guy also get the woman and say, okay, I'll live in a relationship with you, you sign this agreement that when we separate, you get nothing. Yeah? And they do it. And sometimes women are doing the same. They have a prenup for a guy, you know. Okay, we get married, I'll have some children, but when we separate, the children are mine. You have nothing, you have no access to them. So common. And it's just a sign of how degraded this age is becoming. They're entering into a relationship with the concept that I'm going to give up the relationship. They're planning it. It's already planned. They've got this agreement. Don't worry, we're giving this up. You get nothing. Yeah. This is the nature of Kali Yuga. It's becoming more and more things that are, you know, part of a culture and society. They're just giving it all up. And they're becoming more and more like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. And we see dogs and cats, they just go from one partner to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. They don't care. No interest in developing relationships. And so humans are becoming like that. And, you know, we see all this strife that's going on in the world these days with, you know, climate change and this thing and that thing. It's all just a result of licentious behavior. They're thinking it's pollution, they're thinking it's this, they're thinking it's that, but ultimately it's just because of licentious behavior, because they're living lives of sense gratification. Therefore, there has to be reactions to it all. You know, they have sex, they get pregnant, they have an abortion. Yeah. And it's quite a, you know, like we see in countries that people are fighting for the right, the women, especially men, they like to fight for the right to women have abortions. So it means that they can have illicit sex and they don't have to take the responsibility for the child, because the child's an inconvenience. The main thing, and as Prabhupada is saying here, the main thing is sexual satisfaction. That's what they're all focusing on. They just want to be satisfied in sex life. And to have good sex, life is good. And if the sex is not enjoyable, get rid of that one, get another one. Give it up so quickly. So quickly. There's no sense of responsibility. It's a product of passion and ignorance. One cultivates a life of goodness, then one of the prominent features of goodness is duty. You'll do your duty no matter what. But in this day and age, people just aren't interested in doing their duty. They could care less about it. They just want to satisfy their senses. And therefore, we see so much struggle in this material world. I'll finish there. Thank you for your patience. And sorry for my croaky voice. I've been sort of sick for the last few weeks. Any questions at all? Comments? Corrections?
Hare Krishna Guruji, thank you very much for the enlightenment, especially you are mentioning about how an intelligent person responds. He doesn't have faith in fallible soldiers and faith in the material aspects of life. So, I just wanted to know that because as ISKCON has seen the history from Prabhupada was there, then Prabhupada left, what all things happened, like. So, you, among devotee circle, also there was great difficulties happened for people if the main person, something happens to that. So, how as a sadhaka, one should practice this principle of intelligent person does not put faith on fallible soldiers?
Well, as I was saying before, it's really a matter of intelligence. It's just like, say for instance, you're presented with a situation of potential enjoyment. Right? Now, someone who's not so intelligent is going to go, great, let me get into it. Let me, whatever I can do, you know, as quick as possible. Someone who's intelligent is going to look at that, well, okay, yeah, I could do this, and you know, these would be the ramifications of this. This would happen, this would happen, this would happen. Okay, I'm not going to do it. It's just not worth it. You know, the outcome. And just like we see so many times has happened in our society that big leaders have had fall downs with members of the opposite sex. Or sometimes with members of the same sex. Yeah? And, but they don't actually think through the consequences. They don't logically think through, okay, if I do this and this and this, then this will happen and this will happen and this will happen and then I'll be, you know, in a very difficult situation. They just allow their desire for sense gratification to override their intelligence. So, it's just like we see in the sixth chapter of the Gita, Krishna explains to Arjuna the situation of the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. And how one has to, he says, what's that, samyatana, dushpapa, itimimati, you have to control the lower self with the higher self. You have to control the senses with the mind. He says, if the mind is controlled, then one is happy. One becomes peaceful in this life. But if the mind is not controlled, then your life becomes very difficult. And the mind sometimes is so difficult. You know, Arjuna says, Chanchalam Himana Krishna. It's so difficult. It's like trying to control the raging wind. And you know what it's like when the wind's really blowing, what can you do to stop it? You know, you can put up a tent or something like that to try and stop the wind, and the wind will just blow it away. So powerful. So the mind is like that. It's so powerful. And if you allow it to contemplate the objects of the senses, the mind will just overwhelm us. So what we need to do is when these desires, when these thoughts, when these, you know, sometimes when you contact the objects, you see, you know, something is attractive to you, you need to nip it in the bud. Straight away, we have to start speaking to ourselves, preaching to ourselves. It's like this book by Raghunath Das Goswami, Manashiksha. It's called Preaching to the Mind. And you're giving the mind instructions, mana. You're giving the mind instructions, telling the mind, you can't do this. This is not worth it. You won't be satisfied. And the mind will try to convince you, oh, you'll be satisfied. Don't worry, you'll be so happy. But that's, you know, unintelligent people listen to that, but an intelligent person will understand, okay, last time I did something like this, this is what happened. Why do I think it's going to be any different now? It'll be the same outcome. I'll be dissatisfied. I'll be unhappy. Yeah? But, you know, there's this hope against hope. They're thinking, but maybe just one time, maybe just one time if I do this, I'll be happy, then I'll be okay. But it's never happened in the past. Why do we expect it's going to happen in the future? Yeah. Albert Einstein, very, very intelligent person, he gave a definition of insanity. Yeah? He said, insanity means you keep doing the same thing and you expect a different outcome. That's just plain stupid. Yeah? You keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same outcome. Yeah? Isn't it? If you put your finger in an electricity socket, what's going to happen? Yeah? You get electrocuted, right? Okay, you think, oh, one day you try it. It's not going to happen today. I'm pretty sure it will. It happened every time in the past. So it's just, we need to develop intelligence. The way we develop intelligence is by studying the Shastra. The Shastra tells us what's going to happen. It's happened to everyone in the past. It's going to happen to everyone in the future. We're no different. But the mind in the back is telling us, no, it'll be different this time. It'll be different. Don't worry. You'll enjoy it. Okay, I'll try it out one more time. You try it out, what happens? Same thing again. So that's very important. Study the Shastra. But also, one thing that I feel, I find is very important in helping us to overcome these various difficulties is humility. We have to understand that I have no capacity to overcome the material nature. It's only if my Lord blesses me. If I take shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he'll save me from this. But on my own, I'm lost. So this prayerful, humble attitude is very, very important in overcoming the influence of material nature, because we're so insignificant. She's so powerful. But I'll tell you a story. When I was at school, there was this guy there at school, and he was like the school tough. You know what I mean? School tough. You know, he was a tough guy at school. You know? Everyone was afraid of him. And for some reason, he liked me. So I never got harassed by anyone, because I knew that if they harassed me, Cornelius Ballard was going to beat them up. And that's just the fact of it. You know. So if we take shelter of Krishna, Maya's hands off, you know, she won't touch you. So you have to, you know, because we're so insignificant, we cannot on our own overcome this situation. Therefore, we have to take shelter of Krishna with full vigor, with full enthusiasm, with full determination, take shelter of Krishna. And then, it was the saying in the 7th chapter, you'll easily cross over. They easily cross over. Yeah. And there's that nice verse in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto where it talks about the same thing. It's like the mighty, for one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, the mighty ocean of the material world becomes like Vatsapadam. You know, so it's, everything's explained so clearly in Prabhupada's books. You just have to take shelter of the process, take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, take shelter of the Vaishnavas, and you'll overcome. It requires humility. And that's the thing, Prachnabahi, he wasn't humble. He was puffed up thinking, by my endeavor, I'm going to enjoy this mature world. No, by his endeavor, he was suffering. But he just didn't see it. Yeah? Anything else? Oh, yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. As you said that just like in the outside world, the mentality is to keep changing. They have this use and throw concept, like in America and coming to India also.
Single use society. Use it once, get rid of it.
And throw it immediately. So that is not the Vedic idea. In Vedic life, they keep using and use, keep using. But the society is such outside world that we also, within ISKCON, devotees keep... they get these vibrations from outside because of that association around. And people keep changing their temples, people keep changing their departments, their authorities, their guides. So much of... They don't have fixity. So how to have that fixity to go on with the same thing, especially when it is valid? People can give excuses also that I changed this from here to here because of this reason. So the fixity is not there.
Yeah, and the thing is we keep changing because, okay... there's something I don't like about this situation, so if I change, then it'll be a better situation. But the thing they don't contemplate is what is it that's making them dissatisfied with the situation in the first place? Is the mind. And you can go from this temple to that temple, but your mind goes with you. Yeah? So the very thing that's creating that dissatisfaction is still there. So maybe, you know, the temple presence is nicer here, but oh, I don't like the head pujari. So I'll go to another temple. You go to that temple, oh, nice head pujari, but I don't like the bhakta leader. Yeah? So the thing is, like, this is the material world. If you expect perfection in the material world, you're a fool. It's not a place you're meant to enjoy. It's not a place you're meant to be satisfied. The idea is to appreciate the material world for what it is. It's a bad bargain. And Prabhupada would say, you make the best use of a bad bargain. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he would say, you finish up your business as quick as possible and get out of this situation. You know? Go back to Godhead. It doesn't matter where you are in this material world, you will not be satisfied. It's not possible. It's just physically not possible. So just you know, and that again, by studying the Shastra, you'll understand the nature of this material world. You'll understand the temporary situation we find ourselves in and how it is just meant to cause suffering. Because if it was really enjoyable, if it was actually genuinely an enjoyable place, what would be the impetus to go back to Godhead? You know? And we may experience a certain amount of temporary happiness, but it is temporary. It's the same as like, okay, I'm suffering right now with this, you know, I don't know what it is, some kind of infection. I've had it for 2 weeks now. I picked it up in Dubai. And it's very disturbing to the body and to the soul. But there is one consolation. It's temporary. It will go at some point. Either the disease will pass or I'll die from it. But it's temporary. Because when you die, it's all gone. New body. So, again, application of intelligence. Krishna gave us intelligence. Use it to understand our situation in the material world. You'll never find a perfect situation in the material world. There's always going to be something that's going to disturb you. Just the nature of the world. Yeah? Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityagopa Premanandi Hari Om.
Hare Krishna. Let us thank His Grace Narasimha Kavach Prabhu. Prabhuji has instructed us to not give His introduction, so we don't want to violate Him. But Prabhuji travels worldwide and takes care of the deity worship ministry on behalf of GBC, because deities are the hearts of our ISKCON temples, and Prabhuji is taking care of the heart of our movement very wonderfully with the help of other team members. And we have the good fortune of having Him here for a couple of days. We thank Him for His wonderful class and exciting questions by loudly chanting Hari Bol 3 times. Hari Bol! But we are staying in the Seva office room. We are staying here only, no? 204. Well, if they want to meet you, can they meet you personally? Somebody wants to meet you. Any timing or something? If you want to meet Prabhuji personally for any questions, you can meet Him in the daytime also. And today we are conducting yagya for those devotees who got recently initiated at Govardhan Eco Village by His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj. So the schedule is as follows. At 9 o'clock, we will be listing down the devotees' names and registration in the Bhakti Vedanta Hall below. 9:15, we will be playing a video lecture which His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj gave at Pune in the year 2010. So that video lecture will continue till almost 10 o'clock. In the meantime, we'll have volunteers setting up the things here for devotees to sit and do the yagya proceeding. So, 10 o'clock, we'll give further guideline of how to enter the temple hall and be seated at your place. And then further yagya proceedings will begin till around 12 or 12:15. Then there will be kirtan. And after that, there will be prasadam for all the newly initiated, the yagya participant devotees in the prasadam hall ground floor. And we request all the saffron devotees to kindly come there for serving and, you know, have a reciprocation with these wonderful initiated devotees. And for the devotees, it will be in the prasadam hall. That setup will announce further. So, for those who are participating in yagya, they should be in fresh clothes with the Harinam chadar. That's all. Rest everything we will arrange for that. So please assemble at 9 o'clock in the below Bhaktivedanta Hall for further guidelines. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.